So then finally the big day comes for the land run, and it was announced then that President Benjamin Harrison had issued this five-day proclamation which declared the Sac and Fox Indian Reservation and other lands to be open for the white settlement on noon on September 22nd of 1891. So the stories that you may have heard then from the land run and the race was at noon and the U.S. Marshals fired their guns. Can you share what you've heard about that?
Well, some of it great-grandma told us, and of course that was 60-some years ago, so it's hard to remember, but Uncle George was a pretty prolific writer, so he later on put all this down in writing. According to his writings, his dad, George Sr., and some other gentlemen left Squatter's Camp early in the morning. He recorded that he saddled his horse, which was Topsy, a mare, at daylight, and they headed out. They had to go up Stillwater Creek a ways to get to Ford the Creek, and then they went to the east and back down. Apparently, come back down the creek the way I read it, somewhere right north of Ripley. Then they headed east along the Cimarron River and actually wound up down here across the river from Cabin Creek, which is about less than half a mile from where we're sitting right now. And we actually own the property on both sides of Cabin Creek where it runs into the river. And he spoke Cabin Creek several times. Mm-hmm. And they were waiting on the north side of the river, which was a starting point. The horses were fidgeting down at the edge of the water. And he actually referred to the quicksand with the horses stomping around. And so he turned around to get his horse out of the quicksand and asked a friend what time it was, and he said about 5 minutes to go. About the time he turned around and repositioned his horse, well, then the government people fired the guns from over here on the south side up on the big hill. And away they went. And they had already been down and explored enough to know that there was only one trail up the south bank. He called it a cattle trail, and only room for one horse at a time. So he wasn't first in line. I believe he said a guy by the name of Joe Yount was the first one across the river. There was another guy that was probably second, first or second, and he staked a claim, which later turned out to be Indian land and couldn't be a viable claim, so he lost his claim. And then Joe Yount settled the place where we're sitting right now. My dad bought it many, many years ago. So anyway, then the next property was the quarter to the south of where we're sitting, which has Highway 33 frontage now, and that's where he settled. There was other things that happened. They had kind of had a wreck going up the path because they were riding like crazy people, and lost his coat and lost his lariat. And anyway, he got them dallied up and away he came. And when they got up there, if I remember correctly, there was already a squatter there. The squatter they referred to as the people that snuck over here early.
And, also called Sooners.
And tried to be there and make it look viable. But there were some witnesses that knew the position that he came across the river. So they later testified to it, to the fact that he was be the legal settler.
Isn't that true? That was contested for a long time, and it took about 10 years before it was finally settled.
2 years, I think, according to the Guthrie records. That's where they had to go to testify.
But let's go back here when they actually laid claim, because this is interesting, how they traveled about a mile from the river boundary line and they staked claim number four, and he just used a flour sack containing grain for his horse and used it for a signal that this is a claim. But the grass, the blue-stem grass, was so tall that he actually went to a tree and hung his coat from that tree to make sure that everybody could see that. I don't want to be using my words, but if you people know those.
Well, I think this mini wreck that they had down on the riverbank is where he lost the regular flag that he was supposed to use. So when he got there, he didn't have it. And so he improvised and made another flag to stake his claim.
So it's interesting. That's just how simple it was to show that, but then it was contested. So then back at Squatter's Camp, we have his son, George Jr., and then he then is supposed to gather up the mule team to the big wagon with the sideboards and all and set off across the river to meet his father.
Yes.
Yeah, but they actually crossed up somewhere. They call it some kind of ford, and I believe that that was a little bit west of the mouth of Stillwater Creek, where Stillwater Creek pours into the Cimarron. He actually crossed up there and would have came down across somewhere south of Ripley, would be my guess, what's now Ripley, and made his way over here to find where his dad was and where he had staked the claim.
And Brother Stephen must have been right there alongside, because he staked the claim immediately to the east in that quarter section of where great-grandpa staked his.
So the original acreage then of the claim was what?
Now, it was all of them then, to my understanding, were 160 acres. The actual property now is less than 160 acres because had something to do with the correction line whenever they was doing surveying and things like that. So now it's only, I think, 140-some acres. Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, while the land was being contested, George Sr. had four men who testified for him that they had actually witnessed that he was there first.
Correct.
And so we might give credit to those names, because it was Charles S. Gibson, Edward L. McCoy, Stephen D. Stiles, and then Joseph Yount witnessed to whomever that he undid was there first.
That's correct.